I'm asking it this way purposely.
Okay.
What is community policing?
That's a really good question. Much of the debate about community policing has to do with this debate about what community policing means. So community policing has core tenets of philosophies, strategies, and tactics that are associated with it. Generally speaking, the philosophy is this idea that citizens will co-produce crime control, meaning they will take an active part in reducing crime in their neighborhoods. How police departments have taken that philosophy, though, and transferred that into strategies and in tactics is what is primarily where the debate lies within community policing. So let me give you some examples. One of the common strategies associated with community policing is foot patrol. So officers patrol on foot rather than in automobiles, which is associated with traditional policing. While they're on foot, then they have greater access to citizens, business owners. So it allows them to go back to that philosophy, which is to interact with citizens on a much more common basis. Other parts of that strategies are having geographical focuses or beats where officers have a neighborhood that they're responsible for the crime in that neighborhood. And then this idea of prevention, of preventing crime rather than waiting for it to happen and then responding. So what community policing does as far as an idea and what the actual strategies and tactics are, there's sometimes a disjoint between that.
We had a preliminary talk, was it late last year, I think it was? And you told me at that time that one of the critiques of community policing is that it, and I'm paraphrasing, it's more talk than walk. Why is that?
Okay. So going back to the philosophy I mentioned a moment ago, this idea that citizens are co-producers of crime control in their community. Can a police department simply utilize foot patrol for the majority of their patrolling needs and call them a community policing department? Is that enough to define themselves as community policing? Or can a police department create a citizen advisory board and not change anything else about what they're doing and now be a community policing department? You know, right now in American policing, some of this issue is related to the militarization and the rise of the militarization of police at the same time when police departments are saying they're doing community policing.
That is my exact question I was going to ask. Okay, go.
So this is where we're at now. The increased militarization of police departments in the past 30 years, coupled with get tough policies that we have in criminal justice, have had devastating consequences for communities, especially when we look at communities of color. A recent ACLU investigation into police raids found that not only have police departments become increasingly militarized, especially just in the 2000s, but that this militarization has occurred with virtually no oversight. So when they studied these paramilitary raids that officers are using military teams, paramilitary teams like SWAT teams are more commonly today referred to as SRT teams, they found that 80% of those were for ordinary, everyday law enforcement purposes. That would be things like serving warrants in people's homes. Only about 7% of those were for genuine emergencies or what they were created, what those teams were created to do, such as barricades or hostage situations. You know, one of the most significant consequences of the paramilitarization of policing under the guise of community policing is that these raids have disproportionately targeted people of color. That has led us really to this point where we are at today, where there is, you know, a legitimacy crisis in policing, where police departments specifically and the communities that they're sworn to protect and serve are at a disjoint.
Well, understanding that each police department does, I'll put it in quotes, does community policing in its own way, what does the data show about how effective it is overall, or maybe how different ways of community policing are more effective than others?
Here's what we know that I think is most important, regardless of the critiques of community policing. You know, at the end of the day, after, 30, 40 years of community policing, most empirical research suggests that community policing does not reduce violent crime. What community policing does really, really well, its legacy, which we need to pay close attention to today, is that it acknowledges that the police cannot do their job without citizens. I think to understand how this works, we have to look closely at this, at the ideas of informal and formal social control. Okay, so informal social control is made up of people who care about you, who you don't want to disappoint. So I'm going to use an example. I grew up in a small town, and in my small town of Anarga, there were lots of people that cared about me as a young person. So I had a church family, I had school teachers who paid close attention to me, and just community members and neighbors, and they cared about me, and I didn't want to disappoint them. So their informal social control, and they were a really strong mechanism on me, on my decision making when I was a young person. That coupled with this idea of density of acquaintanceship, which is this, I'll give you another great example. The first time I took my Ford Mustang out as a 16-year-old and I was speeding and I got pulled over by a local police officer. When I got home that night, my dad was standing in the front yard with his hand out for my keys, right? He had already heard that that had happened within an hour of it occurring. So those types of controls on our behavior are really, really strong. The police are not informal social control. They are a social institution that are formal control. In community policing, what we are attempting to do is replace this idea of informal social control with formal control. So the reason that this matters is there are communities that community policing is naturally occurring. They have high levels of informal social control. They are already interested in co-producing crime control in those communities. They look out for one another. They pay attention to things that are suspicious. They take care of their neighbors and their family members. In those places, community policing is wildly successful because it's naturally occurring. What's difficult about community policing is when you try to take that and apply that, let's say, maybe to an urban space or to a space where there is less informal social control, where neighbors do not look out for one another. They may not even know who their neighbor is. They might not know their name. They don't know if it's suspicious if someone is moving a television out of their apartment because it's moving day or because they are having their apartment burglarized. The reality today is that if communities and neighborhoods want to reduce crime in their communities, they need to actively participate in that crime reduction. The police simply cannot reduce crime, prevent crime, and solve crime on their own.
This is GLT Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton with ISU Criminal Justice Professor Kara Raby-Hemp. You've talked about informal social control and how it's necessary to successful policing. That is, citizens, in a nutshell, are paying attention to the neighborhood. They know people in the neighborhood. What are some of the more intentional or formal controls that have worked around the idea of community policing?
Problem-solving policing and involving partnerships with non-criminal justice agencies to produce characteristics in a neighborhood that make it less inviting to crime and more likely for people to be able to have access to the resources they need to be successful.
You mean like decluttering streets of parked cars and fixing fences and just things like that? Is that what you're getting
at? You got it. So coupling a city's sanitation department with a group of citizens that are interested in cleaning up that neighborhood to make it less inviting to crime. Or working specifically in neighborhoods where there are buildings that are targets for crime or for drug use, having those buildings eliminated. All of those are just examples of how criminal justice actors like police can work with non-criminal justice actors and community activists to solve crime problems in their communities.
So I want to make sure I have this right. When it's done well, community policing does great things for nonviolent crimes, but violent crimes, there's nothing really community policing can do because it's a whole different animal?
That's right, because violent crime, oftentimes, if you think about it, is related to a personal crime. It's about relationships, right? And relationships are really about that informal social control. The only way to reduce violent crime in communities is to have community members work together.
Does the police have to initiate that, or does that come from the groups they're already partnering with, or are they groups that are not partnering with have to come to the police to solve those problems?
That is a great question. I'm going to tell you that in communities where they have won the support of community groups, activists and neighborhood groups, they have been much more successful than when the police are left to engage in this problem solving on their own. I'm going to go back to what I said earlier. Police need citizens to be effective at doing their job. You know, this is true today more than ever as we have a shortage. Most departments are under authorized strength. They absolutely need citizens to report crimes to them, to watch out for things that are suspicious in their neighborhood, and to identify for the police departments what some of those underlying causes of crime are so that they can play an active role in reducing crime problems in their neighborhoods.
All right. Well, how about this? Can a department that's only implementing certain what I'll call outreach moments, coffee with a cop, even a police substation or a specialized unit of a neighborhood officer or officers, as opposed to infusing the entire department from the academy to ongoing training with the values of community policing, is it really community policing if you're just doing some of those what I called outreach moments? Or does that fall into the whole vague definition of community policing?
I think it gets into the vague definition. And more important to me, I mean, it's an interesting academic question, but to people every day who are interacting with police officers in their neighborhood, I think this is the important part. The important part is that we know now, after all these years of studying police and police strategy and its effect on crime, that there's really no magic cure for crime in society. There is no one type of policing that works everywhere. And so what's really important to remember is that they have to be unique to the community. So the reality is that departments need to adopt a policing philosophy, tactics, and strategies that work for whatever the crime problems are that exist in that neighborhood. And so this debate about whether or not something meets the definition of community policing, like I said, is interesting for us to talk about. But I think for people that are on the streets policing and citizens that are fighting crime problems in their neighborhood, really looking at this problem solving, which, you know, involves specific crime and disorder problems, that is what's been most effective, a community-based, a specific neighborhood-based look at what's happening in those neighborhoods, and then partnering with criminal justice and non-criminal justice agencies that can make the change that needs to take place. And that means that each police department is going to have to carefully examine the underlying causes of crime in the neighborhoods and their jurisdiction, and form crime policies and practices that can address those. That's a very different sort of task for police than what we've asked policing to do over the last, you know, several hundred years. And so it's going to require a very specific shift. It requires officers to be much more involved in the community. It involves them to be analysts and to be able to analyze the underlying problems for crime. And it also requires police departments to have enough time in between responding to calls for service to actually do some of this in-depth analysis.
Well, let me ask about this. There's a perception among many, and I think some of it is fair, that there's a certain type of person that is attracted to law enforcement, and the word authoritarian is what comes to mind. How does that type of person who wants to be in law enforcement adapt to the collaborative idea of what we're talking about, of what community policing is?
I think the type of officer that you describe is sort of an outdated picture of what police do, frankly. In teaching students in the criminal justice sciences department, our students leave our program in criminal justice today. They understand the importance of building relationship with community members. They take specialized courses on cultural competency, dealing with issues related to mental illness in the field, crisis intervention training, de-escalation techniques. So I think that the officers that are leaving education programs today are equipped to handle some of this analysis that we're going to require of officers in the next decade.
What about the ones that aren't leaving educational institutions? Because we obviously have a problem in some areas, in most cities. There's a problem with at least a handful of officers.
I think that is a fair critique of what we're seeing as far as expecting something different from police officers than what we did 15 years ago. I don't want to act like police haven't always had to be smart, because they are. I interview police officers on a regular basis, and you know they're really bright and they're already analytical. But I think this idea of being problem solvers and having a community-based focus or a neighborhood-based focus is something that we're going to have to continue to work on.
That's Kara Raby Hemp. She's an Illinois State University criminal justice professor. I'm John Norton, and this is GLT's Sound Ideas. Kara, it's one thing for the upper levels of a police department, any law enforcement agency, to embrace the whole idea, whether it's a value system, whatever it is, whole idea of community policing. And it's another for that whole idea to get filtered all the way down to the street level.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see cases where it's given a web page, it's given face value, but it doesn't get down to the street?
Of course.
And does that happen a lot?
It happens a lot. And it happens a lot in the history of policing, not just with community policing, but with all police reforms. If you study policing as kind of a student of the history of policing, there have been all sorts of reforms in policing that have been wildly popular for 5 or 10 years and then have faded away because of lots of resistance and obstacles to being adopted. You know, I mean, the other major critique of community policing is that it failed to win the hearts and minds of your everyday line officer. I think that
that's
what I was gonna say. I think the shift that you're talking about of requiring police to do a different type of job came at the same time as community policing, and so there was resistance, right, to that shift. Today, though, what, 30, 40 years later, right, at least 20 years later, depending on where you're looking at the adoption of community policing as the origins, I think police officers assume that this is part of the job today.
Okay. Well, there is a lot of tension between police and the public, and maybe some of it just, you know, acknowledged more in the media than ever before. But what problems do we run into if this lack of perception or lack of understanding among the two groups can't be worked out?
Okay. The difficulty in that is that if policing is a social institution, if their legitimacy continues to be critiqued, and right now it's an onslaught. Like I said, everyone from the president of the United States, former president of the United States, the media, and citizens abroad are critiquing police practices. If you look, there was a recent Pew poll that looked at whether or not these events, these high-profile shootings, are indicative of deeply entrenched attitudes and behavior in policing or just aberration, isolated events. 60% of police said these are aberrated. You know, these are just isolated events. And the majority of the police, you know, have positive interactions with citizens. Only about, 35 of citizens believe that. The overwhelming majority of citizens believe that police need to be more accountable and that their behavior is discriminatory in some you know, nature. That matters to policing. Policing cannot be perceived by citizens as a discriminatory and an illegitimate social institution and have them continue to be able to protect citizens and provide services to citizens. Those two things are incongruent. So whether it's through a community-based program, whether it's through problem solving, neighborhood members and community members and police have to form alliances to reduce crime in their neighborhoods. It will not work well if they continue to work against one another.
Who's right?
I think time will tell. When we're looking specifically at these high-profile shootings, what we know is that in actuality, you know, violence between citizens and police is extremely rare. It is not something that happens on a regular basis. But that does not mean that the shootings that we've seen and the feelings that people express upon seeing those are not correct or that they aren't also right.
30% of the public thinks they're isolated. 70% thinks it's not isolated of the public.
Generally, yeah, the numbers are close.
And on the police side, it's higher.
It's flipped.
It's totally flipped.
It's almost, flipped.
But it does mean 30% of police think this is not an isolated incident.
Right, and that there are deeper issues.
That's interesting. That police, that's a pretty high percentage, more than I would have guessed.
So I can tell you this, that when we're talking about police use of force is a rare thing. So depending on where in the United States you are, anywhere between about 1 and 20% of citizen interactions end in some level of force. Remember, okay. Some level of force includes anything from spitting to deadly force.
Okay.
So there's a continuum of behaviors there in the police use of force continuum. So generally speaking, it's really rare. When you start to look at these high profile shootings that we've mentioned a couple times, they are exceedingly rare. But because of technology, we are all increasingly aware of those, right? So that's the change. It's not as if there hasn't been violence between police and citizens previously. It's that we're much more aware of them because of the footage that's been shot of them and the sharing of those, not only in the media, but also in social media.
So in your research, do you have any statistics on police, you know, why they wouldn't understand how the general public would feel?
What's really interesting is that actually research up until the last couple of years has suggested that citizens feel much more positively about police than what police perceive.
Really?
Does that make... Oh, yeah. Astronomically more.
But they feel under siege right now.
They feel under
siege. Over the last few years, especially.
They do feel under siege.
Probably since Ferguson,
and,
right?
And, you know, it's interesting. Well, and the Dallas shooting, you know, solidified that attitude. I mentioned I've been interviewing police officers. I interviewed an officer the other day, and she said that, you know, police officers today are being hunted. And that's the first time in history that that's true. You know... When we try to filter police behavior and police attitudes and how they're feeling on the job, you have to acknowledge that policing is a really tough job. And it's a very thankless, tough job, usually. And to go to work every day feeling like you're being hunted, that your livelihood, that your life is at risk. And I don't want to be too dramatic, but that was the quote that was shared. You know, that we have to filter that through some of the comments that we're hearing, right, related to police accountability. I think that this is a really tough time to be a police officer.